My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The following is a High Five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah!
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your High Five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Moss Show. We're always talking about the way the world is changing as we look at it through the lens of politics, finance, and technology. Today, I have a big story, a story from history that I want to retell. I want to talk about the truth about the Great Depression, and more specifically, the government's role in the economic collapse. The story you've been told about the Great Depression is not the real story of the Great Depression. You know what they say about history? Those that do not understand history are bound to repeat it, and I want to make sure you understand because I don't want you to repeat it. I don't want us to repeat it. And what I see happening today from a lot of people, specifically in government regulators, is leading us down the same path. Now, there are differences, there are similarities, but the story you've been told is wrong. And so I want to break down exactly what happened. And of course, like always, I'm bringing the receipts. I got the dates, I got the names, I got the amounts, and we're going to look at it as it happened, play by play, so you can understand exactly what happened. Because as I said, a lot of the government policies and a lot of what the people are asking the governments to do are leading us down the same path, and I don't want to go back. If you know those stories, the Dust Bowls, the bread lines, the high unemployment, you don't want to go down that path either. So we're going to break this down. What happened? What really went on? What it was like living through that? How we eventually came out of it? And again, what are the lessons that we can learn to make sure we don't ever go down that same path again? So let's talk first about the background of the Great Depression. The Great Depression. Now, we had the Great Financial Crash as well, 2008. That was also great. But the Great Depression was even greater. So this was set back about 100 years ago. It was actually in the late 1920s, and it really happened in the late 1920s into the 1930s is when this happened. But you sort of have to look at the run-up of this to see what led to this. Now, a couple things. One, this was on the back of World War One. So World War One was the war. There was a lot of things that happened. Specifically, what we saw was a massive war happening in Europe between England and France against Germany. Now, the U.S. got involved because J.P. Morgan was the one that was issuing all the debt, all the war bonds to England and France. And not only were they giving them the money to go fight the war, that money that they were giving them came back to the United States. And so the United States had massive abundance and flourishment because the U.S. was making all of the goods and services that were then going back over into the war effort. So the banking system was profiting by giving the money, loaning the money to France and England. And then the U.S. industrial sector had a massive boom because all that money came back to buy the goods and services for the war. So the U.S. had this massive amount of prosperity. At the same time, over in Europe, they had massive inflation and devastation. So all of this debt they had to take on, they also had to debase their currency. So they printed way too much currency to fight the war. Now, up until this point, and really until 1971, but at this point, gold was still money. Gold was money, but the dollars, the paper gold certificates, were backed by the gold in the bank. But what happened is France and Germany printed way too many of these paper gold certificates, these paper dollars, this fiat currency. And at the end of the war, John Maynard Keynes warned Churchill, hey, you've printed way too much dollars. You've doubled the amount of paper money currency. You can't go back to the same gold to paper peg that you had before. If you do, it's going to cause a massive depression. What you need to do is double the price of gold. Instead of $30 an ounce, you need to have now $60 an ounce because you printed so much more currency. Churchill said, nah, we ain't doing that. And he went back to the original peg. And just like was warned by John Maynard Keynes, it led to a massive depression that spilled over into the United States. Now, coming back to the United States, again, after this World War I, we had this massive amount of prosperity going into the 20s, which was known as the Roaring 20s. The Roaring 20s marked a period of significant economic expansion in the U.S. From 1920 to 1929, the U.S. real GDP, gross domestic product, grew an average of 4.2% per year, which is really good, which is sort of where we've been over the last couple years. And that is the sign of wealth, the amount of goods and services that we're producing in the U.S. growing by 4%. From about $84 billion in 1920 to $100 billion in 1929. Now, all of this growth was fueled by, just like most things, major technological advances, increased industrial production, and of course, rising consumer spending. Now, when that was all happening, we saw the stock market take off, right? By 1928, the stock market was banging. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, the DJIA, reached its peak. It had basically quadrupled in value just since 1925. So in this short period of time, we started getting to the hyperparabolic stage of this market cycle. Now, in the late 1920s, the stock market experienced, you know, like I said, this massive rise. And that's because everybody started to speculate. That's what happens at the top of markets. Everybody hears about all the money being made, all the greed. They all want to come in, and more and more and more people come in to speculate in that. So we have the economy is booming. We have the stock market. The speculation in the stock market is booming. And then we have the personal debt. Consumer debt started growing. The banks were loaning out money, both public and private. And we saw massive amounts of debt going into buying for all types of things, including cars, houses, things like that. So all of this led to this massive expansion in the monetary base, right? Through credit and other means. Now, anytime you rapidly expand the monetary base faster than you've expanded the goods and services, the production base, you lead to massive high inflation and a crash. We can go back to Spain in the 1400s. At the time, gold and silver were money. And they sent ships over to Peru and found one of the largest silver mine discoveries at the time. And they started bringing all that silver back. Why wouldn't they? They found all this money. Let's bring it back. But by rapidly expanding the money supply, by bringing the silver back, without expanding the goods and services, it led to massive inflation. Every time. It doesn't matter where the money comes from, you just can't do that. And this is exactly what happened. We saw a massive expansion of automobiles, households, household appliances, furniture, all of these things, all of this consumer credit expanding, which was good. It led to this massive boom of the 1920s. But the thing with credit and leverage is that it helps you grow way faster, but then at the top, it can help you burn your house down. It becomes unstable at the top. And so for all of these reasons, we saw this run-up into the 1920s, the Roaring 20s as it's called. But then after that come the destruction. So we saw, like I said, this debt increase. But in 1929, we saw the signs of the crash finally starting to happen. In March and April of 1929, we saw warning signs as the Federal Reserve started to realize, oh, shoot, we have created this easy monetary environment. We have too much inflation, too much debt. We better cool things off. Sound familiar? Sort of like what Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve decided about 2 years ago. Oh, shoot, prices are going up too fast. Oh, the economy is going too hot. Debt's getting too high. We better tighten monetary policy. Just like what we saw in the last 2 years is exactly what they saw then. So then the Federal Reserve started to what? Same thing, raise interest rates. If they raise interest rates, then they can curb the amount of debt, and they were hoping to curb stock market speculation. Sound familiar? Now, prior to 1929, during much of the 1920s, the Federal Reserve, like I said, was keeping it this easy monetary policy. But when things got too cooked, too hot, they had to slow them down in a very similar way, just like they do now. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Maugh Show, talking about the truth behind the 1929 Great Depression. And I want you to know the truth so we can avoid going back into the same problems. I'll be back with more of that story in a minute when I come back. Don't go away.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
The following is a High Five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again.
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five.
High Five.
Casino.
Casino.
Win at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
All right, welcome back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to The Mark Maugh Show. We're talking about the truth, the true story of what really happened in the 1929 Great Depression. It's not what you've been told. I want to make sure you know the real events because we're starting to see the same things happening today. And I want to make sure we can avoid this or at least make sure that you're prepared to deal with this. All right, so things got really cooked. The economy was cranking for a long time. Rampant speculation in the stock market. Massive explosion in debt, which led to monetary base increasing and more prices. This was all in the roaring 1920s. 1929, all of a sudden, the Federal Reserve said, oh, shoot, things are running too hot. We better slow them down, just like they did here in the U.S. in 2021. And what do? The same thing they did this time. They started to raise interest rates. They were hoping if they raised interest rates, it would bring stock prices down, just like what they did again. All right. And so this was 1929. And they started to continue to do this. The discount rate at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York was at 4% for most of the 1920s. But in 1929, when they got scared and they decided that they want to slow things down, they started raising rates and they moved the discount rate from 4% to 5% over several months. And it was this 1% increase, it was a considerable shift, at least given the context of the time, that really started to cool things off. Now, to put that into perspective, to go from 4% to 5%, 1%, compared to now, where they went basically from 0 to 5%, pretty big deal. But when they did that, they still had some control over the market, unlike today. They still had some control over the market, which is why that 1% really started to slow things down. And the market reacted. The rate hike contributed to a loss in confidence among investors. Many saw it as a signal that the era of easy money and high profits was coming to an end, which is exactly what the Fed wanted. And then the speculators who had been in the market decided to stop speculating as much because the cost of borrowing went up. Now, when all that happened, we started to see things crashing. When people stop buying, markets stop going up. That's exactly what happened. That's exactly what the Fed wanted, but they didn't actually want, careful what you wish, because you might get it. Well, they got it. And so now we saw the crash happening by October of 1929. So we saw that happening, but we also saw economic weakness. And then we got into this historic stock market crash, October 24th, 1929. It was known as Black Thursday. The stock market began to crash with the Dow Jones falling 11% on a single day, which was a pretty big deal for any stock market to move at that much at that time. And this was the biggest companies in the United States at the time. We're talking about General Motors, Standard Oil, AT&T, you know, companies like that. They took massive hits. Now, in October 29th, we saw another black day, this time Black Tuesday. Massive sell-offs happened. 16 million shares traded. The market lost an additional 12%. And that's sort of the official start of the Great Depression. So 11% in a day, 12% in a day, things really started to fall off. Now, from its peak in September 1929, the Dow Jones lost about 39% by October. From September to October, the market crashed about almost 40%. Now, then moving into the 1930s, then, of course, as the stock market went down, speculation went down, lending went down, then economic activity went down, which when economic activity goes down, then gross domestic product starts to go down. As a matter of fact, it fell by 8.5% in 1930, and then unemployment went up, of course, which is exactly what the Fed's been trying to engineer today. They're trying to get unemployment to go up so they can cool things down, just like they did in 1929. Now, we saw unemployment rise to 8.9% from only 3.2% the year before. So it like tripled in a year. 1931, we started to see the banking crisis. Over 2,000 banks closed. Unemployment now jumped from 8.9% to 15.9%, almost doubling again in another year. Tripled it the first year, doubled the next year. 1932 was the lowest point of the depression for the stock market. The Dow Jones had lost almost 90% of its value compared to its peak in 1929. A lot of people are calling for a stock market crash of 80% to happen. Well, not a lot. There's some people. That's not my base case to happen, but it did drop 90% at that time. Unemployment continued to skyrocket from 3% to 9%, tripling, then from 9% to 16%, almost doubling, and then from 16 to 23.5%, a massive, massive deal. All right, this is where things took a turn for the worst. Now, what happens in markets, like anything in life, we have corrections, we have seasons. People get too far in front of themselves. They get over their skis, so to speak, go over the bars, and they pay the price and they have to rebuild. All this speculative debt, this bad debt, this speculative investments, it crashes and then we recover. But that's where things went wrong. 1933, the New Deal initiatives by Franklin D. Roosevelt. In March of 1933, he became the president and he promised a New Deal. And this is one of the signs that I call for about every 80 years, we see a regime change or a populist uprising. About 80 years ago was this end of World War II. And it was right around this time when Franklin Roosevelt passed the New Deal. And it was really a regime change for America. It went from this sort of American capitalism, laissez-faire sort of regulation and policy, and the regime changed and we sort of got socialism ushered in. We're going to talk about that. What do I mean by that? But this is where basically 1933, FDR's New Deal came in and created just like an unlimited amount of programs, social programs, socialism, social programs, created all types of like 3- and 4-letter agencies. It was the largest expansion of the US government. Just boom, blew up the budget to do what? You know, to take care of everybody, to provide for everybody, pass all these different programs. They created all types of programs. The Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC, spent $3 billion doing that to, you know, provide jobs for young people. Then we have the Works Progress Administration, the WPA, spent about $13.4 billion. Purpose of that was, to give public works, employ millions of people, build bridges, roads, things like that, public buildings. Now, the one question people ask about is, if we don't pay taxes, what about the roads? The roads were there before the government and the taxes were, okay? Then we have the Agricultural Adjustment Act, AAA. They spent about $100 million for farmer subsidies. We're going to talk about this. This was some of the biggest things that caused problem. That lasted for about a year. That was to try to raise crop prices by paying farmers to cut back on production. So if we limit supply, then we'll raise crop prices. But if we raise crop prices, then people can't afford them. I guess I didn't think that went through. We'll talk about that. We saw the Tennessee Valley Authority, TVA, self-funding through electricity sales and bonds, on and on and on. Social Security Act, we saw get set up during this time. Of course, you love that one, the Social Security Act, and on and on and on. We saw the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, get put into place during that time. The Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, was brought on during that time. Funding of the New Deal programs, we saw increased taxes. Government raised taxes massively. Top tax rate to 63%. The Revenue Act of 1933, or the Wealth Tax Act, got put into place. They increased government borrowing. All of these things happened. All right, I want to tell you what it looked like during that time, but I'm going to take a quick break. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show, talking about the truth behind the Great Depression, so you know what happened, so we don't have to repeat the same thing over again. I'll be back in a minute after I take a very quick break. Don't go away.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again.
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five.
High Five.
Casino.
Casino.
Win at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
All right, welcome back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the truth behind the Great Depression, the 1929 Great Depression, because there's a lot of similarities to what we're seeing right now. And if you don't understand history, you're bound to repeat it. And I want to make sure we don't go into another Great Recession. You need to know this stuff. Now let's talk, I kind of framed it up and what was going on. And I gave sort of the external causes for this. It was the massive boom in the economy because of the war. It was the massive credit expansion because of the banks, and it was because of the low interest rates, the easy money policy that the Fed had put into place. Sound familiar, right? Then the Fed hit the brakes and raised the price of money, which slowed down credit expansion and slowed down the economy. That's sort of the truth. That's the story you've been told. You haven't really been told it's the Fed's fault, but it is. But why did it become just a, why did it go from a correction and become the Great Depression? Why did it go from something that could have recovered in a year and go on for a long period of time? Why was it so severe? That's what I want to talk about. And so let's dig into this a little bit. This is the story that you haven't been told. And let's just say, surprise, surprise, it's all the government's fault. Not only did they lead to this massive expansion through easy money policies with the Fed, through this massive credit expansion and the war, not only did they lead to the boom, then they caused the bust by pulling the punch bowl back, right? The vast money, the vast credit expansion by the Coolidge administration, which was there before FDR, led to this inflation, right? But it was the pulling the back that led to the crash. But again, why did it go from just a little crash into this long crash? And it's partly because of what was deemed this New Deal or the new economics of government planning. All right. The world economy was disintegrating at the same time. So it wasn't just the US, it was sort of the whole world going through this at the same time, moving into this new socialist environment, this new government expansion. And so at the time, the president urged businessmen not to cut prices and reduce wages, but rather to increase capital outlays, to spend more. He said if we could maintain purchasing power. And so then they embarked on deficit spending, spending money they didn't have. They called on municipalities to increase their borrowing for more public works through the Farm Board, right? And they, let's just spend more. We'll spend our way out of it. And then things got really bad under what's called the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act in June of 1930. What they did is they raised American tariffs to unprecedented levels, which basically closed off borders of foreign goods. All right. Now, according to most economic historians, this was the crowning folly of this whole period from 1920 to 1933. And this is really the beginning of the real depression. Because once we raised our tariffs, then we saw protectionism run wild all over the world. Markets begin being cut off. Trade lines with other nations were shut down. Unemployment in the export industries all over the world grew. Then President Hoover said he would sign the bill into law. And then industrial stocks broke down again. The market kept crashing. The more the government tried to meddle, the more they tried to protect, the worse things got. The protectionists, they never learned that curtailment of imports inevitably hampers exports. So when we don't import as much, then we don't export as much. Agricultural commodity prices, which had been well above the 1926 base before the crisis, dropped to a low of 47 in the summer of 1932. As that happened, then farms started to go under. Farm mortgages started to be foreclosed upon. And in order to start to sort of stem the tide of that, they passed more laws to now ban or pass moratoriums where they couldn't foreclose on properties, sort of like 2020, when they said they couldn't foreclose on homes or evict people. Then that shifted the bankruptcy to the creditors. So instead of the farms going bankrupt, then it was the creditors that went bankrupt. And then that caused a banking crisis. The main creditors of the American farms were, of course, the rural banks. When agriculture collapsed, the banks closed their doors. 2,000 banks closed their doors because they had deposit liabilities of $1.5 billion, which they had to suspend between 1931 and 1932. 1931 was a tragic year for the whole nation and really into the world because the whole world sort of started to fall into this despair and depression. The whole world is connected. So when you start to cut off supplies through imports and exports, everybody starts to get affected by this. In America, as we already talked about, unemployment went through the roof. More than 8 million people were unemployed. And so then President Hoover, who was still there, called together the nation's industrial leaders and pledged to adopt his programs to maintain wage rates, expand spending, and for federal agencies to do what's called price stabilization policies or price fixing, if you will. And that would be to generate larger crops and surpluses. The problem is when they artificially did that, then it depressed prices. Because when you have more supply than demand, prices go down. So when they depressed prices because they oversupplied, then economic conditions got even worse. As a matter of fact, they went from bad to worse. And then unemployment shot up again in 1932. And then when things couldn't get any worse, we've gone a couple years of this. The government just can't get out of the way. They just keep making things worse and worse and worse. They did it again. And they struck a final blow in the Revenue Act of 1932, which doubled the income tax. It was the sharpest increase in federal tax burden in American history. So if people can't even afford to live, everything's crashed. It's been a couple of years now. Through meddling in the markets with the farmers and whatnot, they've crushed the prices. The farmers are going broke. They can't evict them. Now the banks are going broke. Everyone's going broke. The unemployment has, you know, gone up by 10 times. And then when everybody's down in the dirt, they kick them by doubling the income tax, the highest rate increase in American history. Murray Rothbard, in his book, America's Great Depression, estimates that the fiscal burden of federal, state, and local governments doubled during the period, rising from 16% of net private product to 29%. So when the government takes double the amount of money they're taking from you, what do you think is going to happen? You have less money to spend on other things. Then came FDR. So then FDR took the presidency. He also fought the economy all the way. His first 100 days, he, like I said, he launched all these agencies. He struck in every way at the integrity of the U.S. dollar, including he seized everyone's gold. And not only did he seize everyone's gold, which he gave them dollars for, paper dollars, but then he turned around and devalued those dollars by 40%. So now people are even more broke. Not only did they double their income tax, they're already broke, they doubled their income tax, and then he took half their money from them. That's a double whammy. Double the tax and take half your money, 40% of your money. Then again, then he passed what's known as the Reemployment Agreement and basically put in a minimum wage. 40 cents an hour, it wasn't a lot, but he put in a minimum wage. But when he put that into place, then the unemployment rose to nearly 13 million because now they couldn't hire people for less. So they just hired less people. That's what happened. Then he tried to pass this Farm Relief Act. He wanted to raise farm prices by cutting the acreages planted or basically destroy the crops in the field. So then he literally paid farmers to not plant. Literally paid them to not plant. Before, they planted too much. The supply brought the prices down too low. This time they said, here's a better deal. Instead of increasing supply, let's cut the supply. So now we'll pay people not to plant. But when they did that, guess what happened? Then the prices of everything went sky high and no one could afford it. No one could afford crops. They couldn't afford cereal. They couldn't afford meat. They couldn't afford any of that. Then on top of that, all of these empty fields that weren't being planted led to giant dust bowls, which caused even more destruction of crops. So it's like, can you see? Every single time the government does something to try to help, they have unintended consequences. It sounds good, right? Hey, if we want to get prices of crops to go up, let's just cut the supply. Sounds good, except for all the unintended consequences we didn't think about. When the economic planner saw their plans going wrong, then they prescribed additional doses of the federal stimulus, right? If our plans don't work, let's just do more of them, so to speak. That's always the plan, isn't it? Now, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the truth behind the Great Depression. We're laying down what really happened. I want to talk about what it was like living through that and what are the takeaways that we can get from this. But I got to take a quick break. You don't want to go away. I'm going to give you some stories and what we can do moving forward. So I'll be back with more of that in a minute. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
High Five Casino. High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. The hottest games right from Vegas and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at highthenumber5casino.com.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the truth behind the Great Depression. It's not what you've been told or thought to think. And it's not what people living through it at that time were also taught to think. Because just like today, the government feeds us full of misinformation. It's never their fault. It's never their policies that got us into the problem. It's their policies While it is their policies that created the problem, they don't tell us that. And so then people want more of the same policies that got us into that problem in the first place. It's always the way it works. Now, there's a lot of change that happened after this. We saw, you know, the economy shift gears from a war economy to a peace economy. We saw massive amounts of women. This is really when women got involved in the workforce at that time. We saw, as I said, this massive expansion of the government's role in everyday life. All these agencies were created under the FDR's New Deal. We saw a significant shift in the role of the government in the economy, right? This era of the Great Depression really underscored the potential effectiveness of government intervention in stabilizing and stimulating the economy. But the problem is, like I said, is people didn't understand it properly. The role of the government, you know, and the economic policies of the government and their long-term impacts of that changed. The Great Depression fundamentally changed how we view the role of the government in the economy. Before this, there was generally laissez-faire policies of the 40s, which basically is like free markets. Like, let's let the government not meddle too much and let's just let things go free, which is the good way to do it. However, because things got so bad, then the people didn't like that. And then the people wanted the government to come in and do something, anybody, just make it better. What they didn't realize is that the more the government did, the more they intervened, the worse things were getting, which is exactly what I'm trying to arm you with so you understand how this works. Now, some of the things, so like the New Deal initiated by FDR, very mixed success. It did seemingly provide some relief and it did create jobs, but it didn't end the Great Depression, right? But it did create the social safety net of regulatory frameworks that we have, as I said, like the SEC, Social Security, FDIC, et cetera. It did massively increase the size of the government. And this is a big deal because today the government is making up about half of the economic growth of the country. And it's part of the reason why the Fed doesn't have control over the spending and the growth of the country anymore like they did back then. But really what we saw is, like I said, this shift in the perception of the people. And this is what I want to hit home for you here. Because things were so bad, like I said, the government, the people wanted the government to help. Give us some assistance. Give us some help. Give us more jobs. Help us with the prices of our crops, all these things. But every time they did more of it, things got worse. Protect us so we don't have too much supply coming from overseas. So the government puts in tariffs into place. But then those tariffs then limited the imports and exports, and it also threw the rest of the world into a tailspin. And so in a complex system, you have to understand that everything you do has unintended consequences. You can't just affect one thing, sort of like the body. The body is also a complex system. So if you go to the doctor and say, you know, I have heartburn, for example, they can give you a prescription for that heartburn. But if you look at the prescription or read it, you'll see all these side effects that you could get. Headaches or dry mouth or, I don't know, sick or even death or whatever, right? So there's unintended consequences that I'm doing to my body to fix one thing. And that's exactly where the economy is. So today we sort of have already we're starting to see, you know, the Biden White House is saying that the inflation that we're seeing is not caused by the government. It's not caused by the government spending or the Fed. It's you. You're the one causing the inflation. You're the one that's buying too much. You're the one that's spending too much. They're starting to spend that one. The one we've been seeing for about 2 years now is it's the greedy businesses. How dare these turkey manufacturers gouge you on Thanksgiving? How dare these oil companies gouge you on the price of gas or any other company? They're saying these companies have record revenues. Look how much money they're making. Well, they're making record revenues because of inflation. It's not profits. So what do I mean by that? Let's just look at the iPhone, for example. Say it's $1,000. If I sell 10 iPhones, if Apple sold 10 iPhones at $1,000, they made $10,000 of revenue. Now let's say because of inflation and supply chains breaking down, the cost of their goods went up and now they sell 10 iPhones for $2,000. Well, now they made $20,000 instead of $10,000, but the economic output is still the same. It still was 10 iPhones. It was still the same amount of people working the same amount of hours to produce the same amount of iPhones, but instead of $10,000, they were $20,000. But that is the revenue. It's not the profit. What we're seeing in most companies is though, even though their revenues are going up because of the cost of their goods, services, labor, shipping, et cetera, while their revenues are going up, the GDP is going up, their profits are actually going down because the cost of their inputs has gone up. The cost of their labor went up. The cost of their shipping has gone up and all of these things. And so as an investor, when you're looking at these companies and you're looking at earnings reports, which you should be looking at, you have to understand to sort of cut through the noise. And you want to look at these companies and you want to see their revenues going up, but then you really want to look at the profitability. And so we're starting to see these narrative shifts. Like I said, the greedy oil companies, the greedy turkey companies, et cetera, pillaging us, kicking us while we're down, extracting massive amounts of wealth, gouging us, as Elizabeth Warren and Biden would say. But here's the way a free market works. You see, if a turkey company or an oil company or whatever business you want to fill in the blank with, if they were really raising their rates extremely high and gouging you, as they want to say, if there was all this profit they were making in a free market, other people would come into that market to get some of that profit. So if I'm used to making $50 of profit off of you and now I'm making $200 of profit, other people are going to come in to compete. They're like, well, shoot, if this guy's making $200 of profit, I'll come in and I'll do it for $100 of profit. And someone else says, well, shoot, I'll do it for $50 of profit. Someone else says, I'll do it for $25 of profit. And then we have a competitive landscape. There is no way to gouge somebody in a free market. Because if you do, someone will come in and eat that profit. It's only in a government protectionist regulated and market where they can protect those profit margins. Big businesses working with the government to put policies into place that prevents free markets from happening, that prevents competition from coming and eating into those profit margins. Now, that's not what the government tells you. Just like they didn't tell you in 1929, they're telling you the same thing today. Even though we caused the problem, even though, yes, the Federal Reserve made made much too much of an easy monetary policy. Yes, because between the Federal Reserve and the Treasury, we spent $10 trillion and we caused massive amounts of inflation. Yes, because we shut the economy down and supply chains got wrecked. Because of all those things, we caused massive inflation. But don't worry, we got your back. Now what we're going to do is we're going to slow the market down just like we did in 1929. And you know what Einstein's definition of insanity is, doing the same thing and expecting different results. So if we do the same thing, we should get about the same results. We're going to see stock markets crash. We're going to see economic activity slow down. And then what we're going to do is we're going to get involved in the markets and we're going to say, hey, it's these greedy businesses that are doing this. It's the tariffs. It's the trade policies. We need to tax tariffs. We need to limit trade. We need to re-onshore things. The exact same thing. So just know that when you see this, you can say, I remember this. I've learned this before. I understand that it's not the free markets that have caused this. It is the government intervention. And so while you're looking for more government, while you're looking for politicians to fix the problem, you have to understand that it's not them fixing the problem. It's them creating the problem. So how can they solve us? How can they fix the problem that they're creating? The only way would be to get out of the way and let the market correct on its own. It'll be severe, it'll be swift, and then it'll be over. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Maugh Show, talking about the truth behind the 1929 Great Depression. you know, I want you to learn history so you're not doomed to repeat it. Hopefully you like that. Let me know. Hit me up on social media at @OneMarkMoss. And that's what I got for you today. Thanks so much for listening.
The following is a High Five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah.
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your High Five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
What are you looking for in a new smart TV? 4K picture quality? High quality and immersive sound? A sleek design? All of those are givens, but only the new Roku Pro Series has all of those and the Roku streaming experience and award-winning OS. Get fast, easy access to all your apps like iHeart, where you can stream all your favorite music, radio, and podcasts all day. And regular all-inclusive trips to Roku City. The new Roku Pro Series. A smart TV built by the streaming pros.
A collision between a Chinese jet and an American spy plane.
He came and rammed into our left wing.
With relations increasingly strained, what are the chances of things spinning out of control?
The Western world was asleep.
I'm Gordon Carrera. I'll be exploring the friction in this most important of relationships and asking, has the West taken its eye off the ball?
You cannot ignore China.
From BBC Radio 4, this is Shadow War, China and the West. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.